Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Poet Radio. My name is Chris Funkhauser, host of this program on WGXC since 2015. Tonight I'll be doing something different on the program. Last Friday night, the 20th of May, I took the opportunity to attend a wonderful poetry reading in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, featuring three poets, two who I'd never heard read before. And since the poets presented somewhat short sets, I'm able to broadcast the entire reading. The event was part of a series transpiring at the Familiar Trees bookstore, curated by Brandon Downing and Michael Gottlieb. And the performers were Eleni Siklianos, Gillian Connolly, and Dara Barwad-Dixon. Both Downing and Gottlieb offered introductions, and the first thing you'll be hearing on tonight's program are Downing's extremely poetic and personal introductions.
I want to briefly sound the trumpet for tonight's three readers, and to suggest the impact they're going to have on you, let me tell you a little about the impact they've had on me. It's a little indulgent, but stay with me.
Why stop now?
Why stop now? I met Gillian Connolly and Eleni Siklianos at around the same time, in the mid to late 90s, Gillian in San Francisco and Eleni in New York City in Boulder, through my teacher and kind of mentor, the poet and novelist Maxine Chernoff, when I was a hungry graduate student in San Francisco State's creative writing program. Maxine generously helped to steer me in my, well, energies towards practitioners and poetics who had carved out entirely new quadrants of experience and voyancy. Is that a word? At the time, I was in this nerdy grad school hole, obsessed with Clark Coolidge and John Ashbery, and everyone else could go to heck. Maxine could probably tell I needed new words to live by. I knew of Gillian Connolly as this slightly mysterious presence of the North Bay, who edited the physically, materially giant magazine Volt, which I was incredibly envious of. Hearing her read her work that first time, although I can't recall the exact circumstances, I felt this clicking together of a cosmos, the sly sutures of thought and observation, the mystery. It tore apart the narrow categories of poetics I'd arrogantly mapped out. I never did lose my Coolidge fixation, but by the end of that reading, my squinting bias was gone for good. I followed her work into heck her ever since, and was lucky enough, pre-national disease thing, to hear her work in person every few years after. The publication of her selected poems, A Little More Red Sun on the Human in 2019, and Notes from the Passenger, just out from Nightboat, copies of which are here now, is an event. Maxine also sicked me on Eleni Siklianos ahead of my first extended trip, well, as a nascent poet creature at least, to New York City in the summer of 1997. I still remember how Maxine described her to me, more or less. I hope this doesn't embarrass you, Eleni. Eleni is this incredibly elegant young poet, a few years older than you, maybe. She grew up around Ginsberg and Waldman and the scene out at Naropa, but there's something else about her. Elevated, like she's the poet and the muse at the same time. Wow, I think I said. I also said wow when I first heard her read. Elevated, like at a remove? Elevated, sure, but at a remove, oh God, not at all. Eleni has always rocked this warm, real, sisterly energy. Even at her most divine, most incantatory, and turned up, lucky us, the poems in her latest collection, Your Kingdom, which I can't wait to read in full, are filled with a new feeling, almost special urgency. I hear a bit of the great biogeographer David Quammen in this work, alongside multifarious body shocks, because these poems work to map out the tangled routes of our own sensory formations through the trials of the natural world. Whitmanic, Lauren Niedeker, kinda. But most importantly, it's Eleni, celebrating, agonizing, dragging the medium forward. And she's right here. Dara Barwad-Dixon came into my life quite a bit later, 10, 12 years back, as I, alongside many other younger, or in my case not, poets, made pilgrimages up to the Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts, those satellite towns and hamlets which have for the last two centuries constituted a or the burnt over district of American poetry. Disarming, blunt with bling, terribly warm, invitingly fierce, Dara seemed to gather us into the broad family of writers and troublemakers that she has sustained, raised, coaxed, quietly challenged, passionately encouraged for what, four decades now? That openness is at the heart of her own indivisible work. It turns frontal, brutal, necessary, fun and real, and so right. Poems where you need to remember to breathe as you read. I am telling you to get your hands on Tolstoy Killed Anna Karenina. and read it and read what it says, do what it says right now, and be ready. Before I call up Michael to do the introductions, I'd like to emphasize. Thank you, by the way.
What, me?
Yeah. I'd like to emphasize a trait that ties these three writers together powerfully, at least for me. Not only do they cut open new avenues of linguistic and emotional exploration in their own work, right through the human woods, but as devoted, longtime educators, they keep that door wide open for the rest of us to look into, pass through, and extend. This core of generosity in teaching writing, I tell you, is not at all common. Between them, they've steered multiple generations of young poets, not along cookie-cutter lines of the MFA industrial complex, but towards messy, new, committed practice. Not the fool's gold of awards and publication and residencies and the tenure-track siren, but teaching us to go all in on new perceptions, new language, and daily practice of ripping new holes into our social fabric, which it can really use, right? An incalculable energy is unleashed in the act of aping nothing and no one, doggedly refracting and processing the world through our own engine block, transcribing what comes out the other side. It's more than poetry. It's our necessary renewal. It makes for communities of bright suns. It's beautiful.
Those were Brandon Downing's introductions to the poets you'll be hearing on the program. Downing is himself a fine poet and artist whose July 2022 appearance on this program can be heard on the WGXC archive. Now we'll move on to the reading. Eleni Siklianos, who is a professor at Brown University and someone I know from youthful days spent together at Naropa, read first. Eleni has a new book out, Your Kingdom, and here is her set.
This poem starts with a line by Carla Harriman. In the beginning, there was no doom. The large grass-eating mammals were absent, and so were the grasslands for them to feed upon. Rodents and seed-eating birds, the rose-crowned fruit dove and carunculated caracara, no. The great burgeoning of flowering plants had not yet taken place, so no bees, no. Corals had arisen and corals had exited. Hard-hoofed animals with grain-crushing molars had not arrived, nor had the carnivores with meat-ripping incisors to eat them. No hooves left over in the field. No fridge-sized elephant seals body slamming on the beach, nor amphibian intestines. Obviously, no Christmas. And no Christmas tree worms had yet extended their feathery plumes and delicate radials for trapping scraps of food. No to party politics. Yes to genetic drift. In this picture, your ancestors are shadowy creatures. We'll get back to you when more fossil data becomes available. So, person, what next? What if we saved it all, friend? I leave the word saved to let the pattern speak.
Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna read, the central poem in this book is called Your Kingdom. It's a 55-page poem. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I've threatened to, but I'm not going to. I'm going to read a little further than I read last night at Emily Dickinson's house. So I'm going to read about the first 6 minutes. I've never read the whole thing aloud. I don't know how long it would take. But I guess the thing to know, Brandon set it up beautifully, but I was thinking quite a bit. A couple books ago, I was writing about animal extinctions a lot and the grief of that. It is International Endangered Species Day today. 1 million species threatened with extinction right now. So something that I'm thinking about a lot. But anyway, I wanted to still be in my eco-poetic meditations in a joyful way, however. And I was on a hike in California and I saw a salamander crawl on a log, and I remembered from my zoology class that amphibians invented
shoulders as well as hips. So I love for us all to do this and just remember amphibians. And all these other, yeah, I mean, and then I had to, you know, a salamander didn't do that for you, but a salamander did it first. And so, yeah, just thinking about all the different kinds of inventions that are also, it's a faculty of the imagination that other animals made and that we carry around with us that we don't think about maybe all that often. If you like, let the body feel all its own evolution inside. Opening flagella and feathers and fingers door by door. A ragged neuron dangling like a participle to hear a bare sound. On the path, find a red eyehole rabbit, fat of the bulbous stalk pecked out to the core. A raptor did that. So you can bore back to the salamander you once were straggling under the skin. Grope toward the protozoa, snagging on the rise toward placental knowing. Who developed eyes for you, agape in ape-open waters? The worm that made a kidney-like chamber burrows in, directing your heart leftward in nodal cascade, slow at your hagfish spine. Who will bury your bones, investigate a redwood rain, or tap the garnet of your heartwood bark? Put your flat needles on dry ice to inquire after your tree family, father or mother in the fairy ring next to you, find you are most closely related to grass, if you are a redwood. Your hexaploid breathing pores gently closing at night. When did you begin your coexistence with flowering plants from which arose the bee before the African honey badger, but after the dark protoplanetary disk of dust grains surrounding the sun become the earth? You had no nouns, did you? Feel the gravitational sorting in the pre-lung graphite as it marked toward tissue? The split in prokaryotes when ether lipids did you no good, but still you learn to unleash energy, breaking, making bonds, and house some ancient groping grains in your gut, foraging on gases, and who knows what phototrophic algae did, karate chopping, water splitting to feed on sunlight, and thus you can eat an apple after bacon, benefiting from the invention of glucose storage. But the rugged sex life of the hermaphroditic banana slug, nipping at its partner's current penis, later its vagina in liquid crystal slime, has little to do with you, yet you can watch it and wonder at the structure of your own snot's likeness to its plural wetnesses. Now that you have learned to traffic phonemes plus genes in their own bio-chassis delivery system, glottal stop in your sit-e or button made possible by obstructed airflow, when your organs made for eating, breathing, began to cry out, the tongue in torsion to express your thought, and it was strange how you altered your formant frequencies. An I becomes a you. Around the fire, you switch to pure sound in the dark, and I know what you mean. Turn out the lights and say these words. Love, heard, draft, furred. Then draw them on the board. Behold, a thought flower. No vocally impaired whale, dolphin, or bird could express its song in visual display. You say, forgetting a body breaching, spouting, winging is its own authorship. Yet matter is still sometimes deaf to your summoning, metal filings that won't cohere, or the quantal sounds of a photon can't be convened to your mind, where what flashes may be your proto-reptilian hindbrain, what you learned from lizards gathered to sleep. To swallow, to hear, to see, to feel, even to dream. and later you lost your wet snout as you moved toward daylight, wax of the world made malleable as you reach to touch it, your face a footnote to when you were swimming mouth first to taste and test what was there, because soon you needed a head to see and hear your food. Someone had dropped the exoskeleton like a weight into deep water, plummeting toward your dark vertebral lineage in blue. Could you even see that color? And now you could bend with ease in each direction, your fine-tuned tongue and auditory equipment bristling. You arrange your syllables like a flock of self-forming starlings in a draft aimed out your mouth and at an ear. There is another here. You see the dim traceries of human faces, charcoal in a night chamber, or so pale a pupil could not find such a pearl in a milk pool, and other warm and golden hues as the tone world presents itself as sculpted, and so you rise.
So it goes on. there are so many things in there that I think about. One of the things is that when we started making language, the trade-off was that we had the possibility then of choking. Good to know. Let's see, I have some kind of plan here, if I can remember what it is. Walking Bear Creek in snow. What is held inside? Actually, I'm going to read a different poem. Yeah. Just for a laugh. Polishing my animal mirror. I was polishing my animal mirror. No moths appeared there in the single crystal genetic light in the dark mirror candle night. I was polishing my animal mirror, examining my animal teeth. A snake appeared in the mirror's thin gravel driveway. Someone had run over, had flattened it into permanent S-shape. In the animal mirror, my incisors were not fangs, but surely they could still tear meat. Yes, the cat. Yes, the bear. I was polishing my animal mirror, practicing non-invasive knowing, and wondering about control, the magic kin, magic skin of this animal mirror. Don't worry, that's just me, you say to yourself, shining like a violet ground beetle under a stone. Sea stars are near vertebrates over to the left, coelacanth on the far side riding toward you and birds, reptilian branch aflame on the plain. In the animal mirror, mollusks are inching toward earthworms who, touching themselves, touch earth anew, each time they move. And I'm gonna read, let's see, where is this poem, you guys?
It's there.
It is, it's in here somewhere, I know that. And let's see, it was inspired by, did anyone listen to the sound of two black holes colliding when it came out? Yeah, I'm giving you homework. Go listen to the sound of two black holes colliding and actually look at the picture. There's a picture. So this was inspired by this NASA putting that out. And it kind of sounds like... Delicately positioned mirrors track the squeezing and stretching of space as gravitational waves go by. Two black holes slid toward each other, making a pig's big nostril holes in the sky. One big snout sniffing out space.
Did you hear the rattling antennas? My question is it rhythmic? Time wrapped around you in a snug, dark glove, and you fell loving out of light, like you fell out of light, or light rushed out of you. When a mass 31 times the sun and one 25 times collide, they create a smash hole of 53 solar masses. I'd say you're missing some. If 3 equals thee, that is what you hear now, hissing. Not the fridge's home hum, not the sound of money gushing, but the chirp of ancient space, like gossip sound going sideways across dark, lakish skies. What gossip did space make? Does it rhyme? The breathing in of all the living, the exhalation of the dead. At the uncrisp edge, space twists, divides, and time trembles, scrambles, and leaks like weather. Did you tear yourself out of the visible universe? Yes, one day I did.
And I'm going to read, I have no idea, I didn't look at a clock, but I'm going to read.
You've only read for 1 minute.
Really, Brandon? You're a very good timekeeper. let's see. I'm going to read 2 new poems and that'll be that. This is, it doesn't quite have a title, but it's Bright Mouth for now. We wanted to be perfect in our sounds, so our mouths and the gods agreed. In our cars, we found foliage on our tongues, driving cocodrilos and crocodiles to market. Milk instead of miracles, axe and ask, unclear nuclear. Brid and cross went bird, went horse. Now, ow, they flew, they galloped away, Bjortly, brightly. And this is called, it's titled from a line by Cesar Vallejo, All is Joyful Except My Joy. Joy, just joy. Joy, just joy? No! Sorry, that's really echoey. Is that scary? Okay, good. This is great. Joy, just joy. Just joy and no. Allow no arms here. Here, only joy. Legs? Legs allowed? No. No legs. Only joy. Heads? Heads allowed? No. Just joy. Are porcupines allowed? Okay, porcupines allowed, and joy. Air okay? Yes, okay, air. But no hands, no hands, and joy!
That was Eleni Siklianos reading last Friday in Great Barrington. Second poet on the bill, Gillian Connolly, also has just published a new book, Notes from the Passenger, and here is her Familiar Trees reading.
I'm going to start with a poem called The Passenger. Once and for all mind wanderings of the passenger, the beer garden's composure in its death rattle, green partitions, scaled walls, backstroking waterways, lure to lure. The passenger rejects projection, its limpid, mirror-like distortion, prefers vibratory qualities of the seat cushion, a spreading of the hands. The passenger walked without destination for years without aging, in open sorrow. A suitcase out of which everything had fallen by the wayside, bit by bit, as though a salesperson without wear. Along sidewalks, discarded nurse caps, the gloves of queens, a demolition of the root in the deep microhizal network between white bark pine and subalpine conifers, the passenger began to step and swerve in an unsteady manner. A hologram projected up against a hieroglyph, figure drawings in caves, indeterminate, exact, the sun going red, yellow, red, often never unearthed. The passenger finished off the memory drink with its supernova's hyper-relativistic speck. Sun still more than 4 billion years old, a glimpse into Homeric times when one could pick up one's chariot with one hand. Warmed ocean, open country. It was most like night, this thing we walked into. That's the first poem in the book, and this is the second poem in the book, The Messenger. It's a long poem. It's not incredibly long, but it's a longer poem. The messenger came without papers and song, out of sleep, unharmed, a guide figure at a pit stop, digestive issues, a tingling sore throat. At all times, the time between technologies dripped, a rain silver tinge translucenced into day. Pink-blue shade of one unidentified flower bush, the messenger took a sprig, couldn't say, I am a messenger with epistolary, anthropological, epigenetic trauma. Some deep ancestral thing floats over the greening hills. Surely you understand this, the messenger said, at a loss. The messenger had no distinguishing physical characteristics, but was more a feeling that all was going to be made clear. Necrotic silence in a shed, a peaceful death inside a bunker, an overheated RV, roamed, holding screen and air. One could still breathe out of a twizzle stick. The messenger was part of the deep urge to sit, stand, lie down in an aura of intimacy awaiting the message, the charged surround data claims we open around 15 times a day, awaiting the message it does not matter what one secretes or imbibes, whether is a serotonin permafrost, a lickable flame. The messenger would sometimes appear stretched out before the monument, overgrown dragonflies, iridescent at pairs, flip mortality over the body, picking up pairs, the body that is grounded by the planet. I have sent you a moonstone talisman via snail mail, says the messenger, attempting friendliness. Also, pain is everywhere. War never cleanses. In her silk coat pocket, the algorithm fibrillating, the messenger wanted an implant in the hand the size of a grain of rice to get shopping done, the blackout curtains drawn under a sun, color of fresh salmon, now frozen, some said a new seasoning of smoke and ash sprinkled over slices of mango would pretend the messenger was a temporary non-citizenship in an exclusive, genderless, paradisical future universe, an orb where we take a car, an invaginated spermicide, down pathways to an old belief system turned glassine, on which, on either side, we who were awaiting the message in an aura of intimacy peered, looking through, smitten by the mystery of one another, as if that were the message going all Cohen with a worn deck of red cards, a divining rod, whispering technology of a battery clock. I would love to begin to explain the many voices plugged in, wires dangling, a desire for windstorm. Starlings sing to hear themselves. It is pleasurable, reply the naturalists. I would love to begin to say something to relieve the onslaught of unleashed voices, but it appears I have fallen down a sky blue tube in the aura of intimacy, awaiting the message between birth and personhood. Death's even song enters everyone you love, pierces gut, and everyone forgets very, very slowly. Pears flushed russet in trees, a quiver over history's ossuary of banality and greed, though roadside tumbles a child's silver bucket, handle still on the pail. Why daylilies? Why thistle? Why shoes, hats? To carry departed's death essence to those of us remaining among the longest living. We lost the baby, though the baby crowned. When we loved, we were crowned. The sorrows returned when our crowns, gems, thorns, ruptured into our skulls. Bombs, bombs, dick pics and bombs, the live takes of how to sweep cages of baby shift back onto ruling class. I would like to message you, but the white, powdery appropriation of my throat, cuttlefish, songbird, vapor in this body is like a body politic or stringy cloud. Everyone a sage, rising on a platform, a rapture massaged into all of the throats, multiglotta, the collective dream of art. How even in death or in birth, dust motes glint the perineum, a celestial orbit. The messenger presents the body with a very clean blood and the curse, a head full of Ouroboros for a wig if all hair falls out. In the middle of no more money, in orgasm, we give ourselves over to the briny substance just under the surface of the divine. Somewhere in love remains trust, in the melody, in the die-off, in the clear, clear water the messenger is tracking, Daedalus, where the mysteries are contemplated, in the true ink and felt future public orphan of the word, sky blue. Clear sky blue. Thank you. In this poem, there's a reference to Saint Perpetua, who invented the diary in prison in 203 CE. In a, Roman prison already? In a Roman prison in Carthage while she was awaiting execution. And it's the poem is for my daughter, and it's called How It Was No Longer Only the Country That Was Divided. It was the order in their words, so that when someone said work, we lay down, so that when someone said art, memory was our insufficiency. We caught it in our hands, grievous sharp. After 5 or so years, the t-shirt pills. Every day, I say, try throwing it away to teach my daughter something new. Your grandfather's war helmet, I say, your grandmother's high pile of cottony tresses, the opal axis of her hairpin, steel mink of her closed eye, something new. Who speaks through your mouth? Throw it away. Do you want it to say, Sister Perpetua or Mother Apocalypse on your t-shirt? Tumbling out, a word order reveals a pack of boys who unzip to sire the city seepage. I say, if dust cosmological camouflage cuts us, we reroute to another street. I mean, who knows? The house might not even be here. You, however, are my wonder, fatal, prenatal as water down a leg. I was born after a war, came of age in a war, leave war everywhere. Who speaks through your mouth won't be me. Something very large and open and waiting, waiting. I errand to fill my hull. You scroll and want worlds, the many worlds of wanting worlds. The gentle body of light enters the car, slow surfing the speed bumps, carrying us along oceanically. Because I am vanishing, I think to show you how, but not just now. Let's not talk just now. Return. Return, says the body of light, deciding to not decide which one of us to call into gentle body of light's luscious quandary, settling also into the front seat, transmuted, inflamed, our faces, our voices. If as mother, I gave you mortality, if as daughter, you gave me immortality's brief mirror glint, you are reaching into screen to play your music. If this is the end, empty hands of humanity, will not tomorrow be enough for you? Mortality upon us with its rosy edge of want. Mortality upon us with a rosy edge of what? So nothing cannot go unsaid to pass the night in open air. Saint Perpetua invented the diary in prison. And after requesting water, knew not to ask for any other favor but perseverance of the flesh. I'm green and strong as live oak on dry gold grass. I'm blue with externalizing my interior enemies. When they are gone, I aspirate in primeval mist. James Joyce wrote The Dead until the last page was snow full. If there is fire, we will pick it up, play with it. Gentle body of light, I am lonesome pine for you. Who speaks waits under the blind glare of Jane Eyre's mysterious red room. Unlock and we river cane the lyric. You know that patois? Gentle body of light, you've got such a cruel ideal. Grievous, sharp-nailed coyote steps at seafoam's edge. If we isolate the isotope, may it rain in the echo chamber. Gentle body of light, when we're within you, we're outside you. We swim the plasma. We wood shred the threshold, find airport by matchlight. Okay. This poem is called, it's called Bodies I Lie Down With in Bright Grass. My father, who was a World War II veteran, he actually won a Silver Star and became a staunch anti-war person later in life. Bodies I Lie Down With in Bright Grass. Everything a lot easier once I began speaking directly to the dead. In the crisp air, in the space flying toward me, an invitation to run to and with. The American eagle can push a goat off the side of a cliff. It has no predators. One she I spotted, OD'd, or plagued. One she who wished for something a little more phonic than the bald eagle for our national bird. Faces sharp as other, steady on. Acid head boyfriends in Vietnam, polyvalent, colonial cinematic warriors on constant replay. My father's World War II scar across his back, diagonally rotted between shoulders, a Christian love he walked and talked and U.S. took at 22, replaced with a strong scotch in one hand, a Winston in the other, and more church, church, church. A pew we practically wore through, sitting with him. Why he sang so loud, the in-between, and I am other, a why we run, a paradise. Okay, so I have another death poem. We were joking in the car that we would just be like really deathy today. So, okay, this poem is called All the Dead Arrive in Skanes, and it was written during quarantine. All the dead arrive in skeins from slopes out of forests begat in forests, neglected fields completely wide out in the open, in the kitchen, bodies reeling, unreeled, a film, blur. How do the infected dead feel about the natural dead and the murdered dead? No time for that. That was the living dodging one another, folding in upon their families a soft meringue. Berry-stinged hands, bone marrow, faded photo imaging. The people walk, run, walk, the smell of bread, a humidity in which the hair dampens. Decomposition in a body bag, the city's gold day, a dispensing chemist. Mucus, fog, mist, in the sunny pantry. Psalm, asylum, amaryllis. In dreams, I sweep your forehead, a lavender post-it. Each day, morning, noon's rage light, angles down corridors of walking, passes night. Make such lovely maze. The sun looks back to dawn. See who's up. I find you, the feet plant, the head falls low, lower, the spine lengthens. I'm gonna close with a poem called White Spruce. And thanks again for having us. This is really a treat. If all experience is mystical, the white spruce swayed in the window, branch by branch, almost to the doorstep, willow-like, near your sun-damaged eyes. And what do darts, sinuous motions, have to do with leaf's actions? I asked the young woman. I asked the grandmother and the entire family crawling across the floor. And who is the young returnee who would carry his AK-47 past the 7-Eleven, almost to the corner and back, wanting chips, sometimes candy, a contemplative on duty? This wake, sleep, see, the planet and its lost parts lay plow to the furrow, dream a little dream with me.
That was Gillian Connolly reading at Familiar Trees last week. She was followed by Dara Barwa-Dixon, who published a great book last year, Tolstoy Killed Anna Karenina, and also has a new chapbook titled Nine, which I believe she also read from. Here's her set.
I'm going to read a couple of poems from this new chapbook. And this one's called Human Behavior Involves Complicated Adjustments. He hates her. She resents this, but doesn't know what to do to be less hated, to be more liked. He's seething. He's furious. She's smiling, goofily, looking as if she is amused by their standoff. They will have a terrible trip to Miami. I was not there. In the flesh, to see with my own eyes, to hear with my own ears, to feel with my own skin, to taste with my own tongue. Why would I pretend I was? Maybe a wind might, maybe light from a moon or sun. Maybe better to say so, I was not there. I was adding myself into where I never was. What did I think I could do? here is where I am. What I'm doing here is calling out to you. Okay. And then this is a poem called Poetry. Makes the bad things we say better. It makes the unforgivable things we do come close to seeming forgivable. The worst understandable, the least worthy somehow elevated. And that may be what poetry does. It may be why it even is. It takes what's awful and says it's tragic. It makes lies less lethal. It blows oxygen on flames. It holds onto names better left forgotten. It pretends crime is a paradox. It takes what kills and says it lives. There is no stopping what poetry does.
Mm. Damn.
Well, you get asked all the time, what is poetry to you? You know, so I've tried to answer it. So this is called The Smell of Stale Milk Chocolate Coming Out of Its Cellophane Wrapper. It is as sharp as a dull dagger, as full of broken promises as it comes with a dull shine, as frank as anything, and as sentimental, and sad, and terrible, therefore beautiful, in the way something can be beautiful because it has to be. All right, and then I will, you know, since it's winter so far behind us, I will read you a poem about snow. It's called When There's a Midnight Storm. And headlights break into darkness, and I hear their unfamiliar voices and the noises of their plows and their blowers and their shovels and their boots make sharp thuds, and their silences darken quick oblivions, and they never say a word in my direction. But for a good long while, between their lights and scraping and their hurried, unfamiliar voices, everything they do says in quiet rumbling and sharp clanks, everything returns in midnight silence. Nothing belongs to us. Okay, now we're going to move on to Anna. And I'm going to read the three epigraphs the book has on it, and then read maybe three poems. So this is January 25th, 1851. I've fallen in love, or imagine I have. Went to a party and lost my head. Bought a horse, which I don't need at all. Leo Tolstoy. This is Mary Shelley. Remember, I am thy creature. I ought to be thy Adam, but I am rather the fallen angel whom thou drivest from joy for no misdeed. And finally, John Clare, I sleep with thee and wake with thee, and yet thou art not there. So this is a poem called Simile for Its Own Sake. I think I had been feeling kind of like bad about not liking a lot of similes. So I was trying to redeem myself in the eye of the simile, you know, because you need them sometimes. So Simile for Its Own Sake, like a ghost ship in space, something see-through, how the moon used to be, impalpable, untouchable, or when you go to touch it, your hand goes through it, something haunted, like a lake, like half a head of hair. Like the last few turns of a spinning wheel, like a sponge dripping blood, like a tired horse, a broken pillow, steel-toed shoes, like a long, sharp, winding strand of hair, like a two-toned baby rattle or rattlesnake, like Coca-Cola, like where you were born, like where you come from, like from where you get your looks, like from who are you, like chills curving over your skull, like as if your skull is the horizon. Like light on a wall you've trapped behind, like gravy. like the last sliver of light seen through bars on a door, like the smell of a just sharpened pencil, like when you first set foot through a door, like where you hope to go next, like a thought branching into other thoughts, like a thought one can't stop, like a thought you want nothing to do with, like that thought finally put to rest, like putting a thought in its place, like taking a thought away from other thoughts, like not letting one kind of thought overwhelm all others, like being swamped, like water in the rain on your face, like tears and rain mixed up on your face, like your face all wet, seeing it in a mirror, like why this is happening, like what can be done about it, like who's there to see it, their eyes left out in the rain, like all the quiet places in the near silence of your brain, in your brain's way of being, like a trance you fell into long ago, like keeping your own head down, like being in your head, not mine, like who you are willing to let in there.
Okay.
This is a poem called Credits. And this creature of love I took from poems I found in a book on the floor of a closet. I took their shapes and the smell of cedar, and I took comfort in how they looked at me. I took what I could take from a Sappho of my own feelings, and this cold stare I took from her friend Shakespeare, who I found to be also a friend, also always with words to spare. It is said he used over 12,899 of them. I took obedience to the turn of the earth, its seasons, its weathers, and time from Duchamp and possibly his sister, while the river I grew up on took me to this sharp little the with someone asleep under an overpass. And this A I took also from someone I ought to have treated otherwise. I borrowed this nipple from my own mother, who disowned me and chose never to suckle me nor any of her children, neither sons nor daughters. A tender heart I took from John Keats, and I took the souls of animals from John Clare. And from Mary Shelley, I took to understand a creature's responsibility to what she creates. I took to understand what's created ought to be loved, not abandoned. All along, I took what I could and I gave it away for love and out of fear of loathing, which I took from all the holy books. And from Christopher Smart, I took courage to kneel down naked and be laughed at for it. I took from friends and lovers all I could without taking too much. All along to be rightly indebted, so if anyone chooses to feel what I did, they can rightly deny me. I took this into my heart, and while I did not always live up to what I would have been had I been better, I took more from them than anyone should take from anyone. What Walt Whitman could not give me, I took from Emily Dickinson. And from her, I took a slice of brain at full operating speed, and I took also a sliver of her bedroom's wallpaper. I took from Marianne Moore love for precision, fierce humility before evidence, patience before conclusion, and from her friend Elizabeth Bishop, I took an understanding of the inability to withstand living. I took hands half in suds from her and did not give them back. Furthermore, I took fear of our reasoning minds from Edgar Allan Poe, which fear I further found a mind's reasons will stop at nothing to fulfill its wishes. This bundle of nerves I found among ratiocination, he thoughtfully presented in order to give me what reason could not accomplish, poetry could contain. And from John Donne, I took an attitude it turns out I might have fared better without. And from William James, I took the dawning of the significance of self-consciousness. As a boy, his father screams as his son leaves his life behind, while his son's brother listens and thinks how perfect his father's agony was. From Gertrude Stein, I took comfort in her audacity to love her writing and as one way to spend her time. As a child, I took from E.E. Cummings' dooms of love and words involved with one another's personalities. I took what I could when I could take it. I took what I wanted when I needed it. I took more than I should have taken and returned none of it. Other times I took my share. When I knew what I took, no one else wanted. I took more than I deserved. At least that's what I was sometimes told. I took what I could where I could find it. I took time when time offered itself to me. I took a look and I backed off or I settled in. I took cover more often than I should have needed to. I took a long time to understand how much power lies in giving and taking a life, all the while judging its value. It took some time before I found what Flaubert does to Emma Bovary is no different from what Tolstoy does to Anna Karenina. What I left, I could not have taken. I left it for others, for their own sakes. I took without asking, when I understood asking would get me nowhere. I took to whispers and secrets. I took to hiding in the folds of shadows. I took to it the way a newborn camel takes to its mother's side. Okay, and I'm going to end on this poem called Capitalism. It makes me feel about as low as ASAP makes me feel. As if someone is warning me a snake's in my path. Only it's a pretty snake I'm in need of to make my life whole. There are so many kinds of us coming in various versions of ourselves and one another. There is, for instance, a type whose bold sense of entitlement is bolstered by an unquestioned innate sense of righteousness, something calling for constant comparison, something sometimes useful, other times blindly obliterating, to beauty, grace, love, empathy, sympathy, insight, courage, humor, love, grace, humor, generosity, foresight, wit, empathy, grace, sympathy, empathy, sincerity, grace, truth, beauty, with courage, adventuresomeness, surprise, love, humor, empathy, kindness, withholding judgment, love, humor, empathy, recklessness, generosity, love, humor, despair, understanding, love, humor, empathy, recklessness, love, humor, despair, loving kindness, love, humor, empathy, humor, joy, sympathy, love, kindness, courage. Thank you all.
That was Dara Barois-Dixon reading on May 20th at Familiar Trees in Great Barrington. As always, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to Poet Radio. I'd also like to thank Brandon and Michael for organizing the reading you heard tonight, and Rudy at Familiar Trees for providing the space for it. Please stay tuned for more exciting programming on WGXC, Radio for Open Ears. A Disco 3000 will be up next after these announcements.